three different Svarim whose names are drawn from Parshas Bo. Parshas Bo shifts the conversation from Va'era, which is focused primarily on Paro, his court, his officials, his people, the Makos, and shifts it, of course, to the story of Am Yisrael's Geula, Korban Pesach, and a lot of Svarim's names are going to be built on some of the Psukim and words. So one of the interesting phrases is the contrast between the darkness which enveloped the Egyptians, Uchol b'nei Yisrael ha-ya'or b'moshev osam. The Jewish people had light. The Jewish people, the Yisraelim, had or. This is the name of a very interesting collection. It's not truly a sefer, but it's a collection of letters that were compiled by one of the Talmidim of the great 19th century revolutionary thinkers, none other than Rabbi Yisrael Lipkin, otherwise known as Yisrael Salanter, who was the founder of the Musar movement. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, very interesting, of course, life, aside from the work that he bequeathed to the Jewish people, innovated the concept of Musar. For centuries, Jews had studied Torah texts, assuming that the study of formal Torah texts, technical Torah texts, would trickle down into moral improvement, moral sensitivity. After all, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word. But in the modern era, things had changed. At the very least, the correlation between Torah study and moral improvement and religious behavior was no longer to be assumed, was no longer implicit. People were studying Torah absent of moral improvement. So he begins this idea that he proliferates through his Talmidim, that serious time has to be dedicated for moral improvement, for the development of Yirat Shamayim. What's interesting is that if you read the introduction to the Sefer Koch Ve'ar, which is a compilation of his letters, and I'll mention the letters in a few moments, by one of his Talmidim, Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, Rabbi Yitzchak of Petersburg, or Itzel of Petersburg, known to many as Itzel of Petersburg, he talks about the famous Rambam in Shmona Prakim, the Akdam of Shmona Prakim, which the Rambam says there are illnesses of the body and there are illnesses of the neshama, of the soul. And just like illnesses of the body require consultation with doctors, similarly, illnesses of the soul should be guided by consultation with Talmidei Chachamim. And this becomes the clarion call, the basis for Musar's insistence that people seek direct infusion or direct intervention in the development of their neshama. And what's interesting is that it's a period piece, because in the 19th century, there were great leaps and great advances in the field of medicine. So as the illnesses and the infirmities of the body are being addressed by this ever-burgeoning field of medicine, so it becomes all too apparent to Yisrael Salanter that similar efforts should be made in the spiritual realm to improve your soul. Now, what's interesting about the Sefer Or Yisrael, again, it's a Sefer compiled by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Talmud, one of his Talmidim, Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, is that it's a compilation of letters. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter saw himself as a revolutionary, and there really are two types of revolutionaries, those who think in revolutionary ways, but they don't see themselves that way. Maybe they're not fully aware of the disparity between their ideas and the commonplace. Then there are people who have a real sense of trying to launch a revolutionary system of ideas and change consciousness. In any event, we saw Salatner is certainly the second one. He's writing letters that actively try to draft people to study Musar, to encourage yeshivos to study Musar. It's also very related to the period. There's a lot of advances in communication. In particular, telegraphs are being sent, and he has access to telegraphs in the 19th century. What's also interesting is that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a consummate outsider. He never really inserted himself into a classic yeshiva, which was a classic institution of the day. You would think that for someone living in this period from 1810 to 1883, it would be obvious. And he's primarily starting in Central Europe, in White Russia, and in Poland. So you'd think that he should attach himself to either Volozhiny Yeshiva or the Hasidic Yeshivas that were very popular. And he certainly was a Talmud Chacham of the caliber that would have warranted his being appointed. And there was a point in which he was a Rosh Yeshiva of a Yeshiva in Vilna. But at some point, a different person got the nod for the actual Rosh Yeshiva of the large yeshiva. So he moves to a small village on the outskirts, and then he makes his way to Kovno in 1849, and then to Prussia in 1857, and then ultimately in the end of his life, in the 1880s, he's in Paris in Germany, considering a major project of translating the Talmud into different languages, including modern Hebrew, consulting with many people in the academic field. There's a lot of work that's been done questioning about, did he become someone who's more supportive of the academic world? Certainly a lot of his life indicates as such towards the end of his life. But he's like an outsider, in part because the Musar movement was not universally adopted, and he was kept at bay, and there were certain conditions about where he could give a shiur and where he couldn't give a shiur, and what was the limits of Talmidim he could or couldn't have. So, he's much an outsider, but he's writing letters to his Talmidim and writing letters to people to try to encourage some of these changes of Musar, which I'm not going to delineate in this shiur. But it's an interesting Sefer, name or Yisrael. It has that revolutionary sense of trying to bring new light to a sonorous situation, at least in the mind of the Musarniks and the mind of Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer. And it's a compilation of many letters, not mundane pedestrian letters, but letters describing why Musar is important. Okay, the next Sefer that I wanted to speak about, going backwards in time, is the Sefer Haguda. In this week's Parsha, the Jews are expected to take an aguda, expected to take a sheaf, an aguda's azov, a sheaf of, or a bundle of little reeds, dip it into the blood, and place the blood on the doorpost. And the Malach HaMavos will see the blood and will pass over the home. So there's a sefer called the Sefer HaGuda. Actually, I'm picking up the recording device, as I'm looking in my bookshelf, I think I have one, but the fact that I'm not sure that if I have one pretty much says it all. I think I have that sefer somewhere. But it's not a sefer that people read too often directly, but it's a sefer that figures very prominently in Psak Halacha. This is a 14th century German posek. I don't think I have one. My memory serves me that I do, but again, it's irrelevant right now, because if I don't know where it is, it means I rarely use it. It was written by Rabbi Alexander Zuslin HaKohen, and primarily in Germany, one of the leading Germanic Ashkenazic poskim of the 14th century. And he basically writes a pre-Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch, in which he eliminates much of the back and forth, and he just provides the conclusion of the Gemara, similar to other pieces written in the century before and after, let's say the Ravan or the Orchis Chaim. He's still writing a commentary on Shas, and he's just excerpting the Psak Halacha rather than rezoning the halachic system as the Torah did into four new zones: Arachayim, Evan Ezer, Choshen, Mishpat, Yerodea. So he's still writing. That's partially what makes him less popular once the Torah comes out. Now it's easier to find ideas because they're zoned into four different sections rather than trying to pick them out of meandering shas, which moves from topic to topic. What's notable about this, first of all, the Ramah, Ashkenazim who are listening to the shiur, who follow the Psak of the Ramah, quotes him prodigiously. Very, very popular to the Ramah, very popular to the 15th century and 16th century Ashkenazic poskim, the Sefer HaGuda. Now, what makes the Sefer a bit unique is that he writes halachic psak even about topics that were no longer relevant. So many svarim of the day, you no longer have discussions of taros or of kachim, but his Sefer includes halachic psak based on the summary of the Gemara in the areas of kachim and the areas of taros. It's a very, very popular posek, 15th century, a lot of 15th century dramatic poskim in particular. Marival quote him a lot. There's a lot of different rumors about his death. In 1349, there was a pogrom in which 3,000 Jews were burned in a German town surrounding the Black Plague. And it's not clear whether he was or wasn't, but there's a kina that was written about that, about the 3,000 Jews who were burned alive. And in that kina, Rav Alexandri is mentioned, that he was killed as well. So it sounds like he was killed in this 1349 pogrom. However, he's rarely referred to as Rebbe Alexander HaKadosh. Generally, people who were killed by Kiddush Hashem were referred to in later literature, later Svarim, with the appellate HaKadosh. The final Sefer I wanted to talk about is a Sefer called Chukas HaPesach. Zos Chukas HaPesach appears in Parshas Bo. And the Sefer Chukas HaPesach was written by a fascinating 20th century personality, Rav Yehuda Gershuni. Now, Rav Yehuda Gershuni was born in the early part of the century, 1908. His family's name was not Gershuni. He was known by the town he came from, the town of Grodno. He was known as Rav Yehuda Grodno, or the Eloi of Grodno. Fairly classic childhood about an Eloi, someone who was clearly known to be a great Talmud Chacham at an early age. Learned in some of the big yeshivas of the day, learned with the Shimon Shkab, learned with the Baruch Bar Liebowitz, the Baruch Shmuel, and the Kamenetz Yeshiva, learned in the Mir Yeshiva. So in the first 25 or so years of his life, he's following the normal patterns of any big Talmud, budding Talmud Chacham in Europe, learning in major yeshivas. Now it's 1933, and he moves to Israel with Rabbi Baruch Bar Liebowitz's support, his Ebbe's support, and he becomes very close to Rav Kook, and he learns in Rav Kook's yeshiva, Merkaz HaRav, and he is an older person, of course, he's 25, so he's learning with two up-and-coming Talmidei Chachamim in the Rav Kook yeshiva. One is Rav Sher Yashiv HaKohen, a younger boy at that point, Sher Yashiv HaKohen, and one is Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria. So those who know the Merkaz Rav Kook, the Merkaz Yeshiva lore, these are two major figures in the Merkaz Yeshiva. He receives smicha from all the leading rabbanim of the day, Reb Chaim Moser, Rissa Zalman Meltzer, Reb Yitzchak Halevi Herzog. So he basically hits the trifecta. Anyone that has smicha from those three clearly is worthwhile. And he changes his name based on Rav Kook's urging from the name Rudy Grudner, or the family name, which was something else, into Gershuni. I believe his father's name was Gershon. I believe his father was killed when he was young, but I believe his name was Yehuda ben Gershon. I'm not sure about that. In any event, there's a third chapter to his life. There are actually four chapters to his life. In the 50s, he moves to America, and he starts a yeshiva in Brooklyn. And the yeshiva is very Zionistic, and it's alongside of university studies, and they're learning a broader menu. It's not just Gemara, but Tanakh. So very much a forerunner in the 50s for the modern Hesder yeshiva, in which is not just Gemara, but Tanakh and Machshava and Agadita. Now he moves back in around 1974, and for most people listening to this recording, probably your contact with him, if you don't, it's a beautiful Sefer Chukas HaPesach. If you go through the laws of Hilchos Pesach and Karban Pesach, it's really a Lamdash Sefer. But for those who may not have had that exposure, he was one of the early participants in the Encyclopedia Talmudit project in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. A lot of the pieces you'll find, if you especially look at the early editions, you'll find Yehuda Gershuni as one of the contributors. So a tremendous Talmud Chacham of his day, and he wrote the Sefer called Chukas HaPesach.